All right, so again, this is Brother Jackson, and we are doing the book of Acts chapter 14. We did verses 1 through 10 last Sabbath, and we will continue from there. So from verse 6 to 10, we saw how when they left Iconium, they went unto Derbe, a city, Lystra and Derbe, cities of Lycaonia. I guess not too far away from Iconium, where they left because of the persecution, attempt to kill them. They were preaching, and as they were preaching, they were at Lystra and saw a man who was impotent, who was lame, without strength in his feet all his life. And he was crippled from his mother's womb, and he never walked. So he was crippled, he never walked. And this crippled person heard Paul speaking, and the same heard Paul speaking who, in this case Paul, steadfastly beholding him and perceiving, discerning that he had faith, the right understanding to be healed, he said with a loud voice, "Stand up right on your feet." And he leaped and walked. He didn't just get up. He leaped and walked. And this was done by the power of the Spirit working through Paul. So that's where we left off. So let's continue with verse 11 and do as much as we can. And I'm really praying and that I can go through this as efficiently as possible so we could finish. So verse 11 of chapter 14 says, "And when the people saw what Paul had done, they lifted up their voices, saying in the speech of Lycaonia, 'The gods are come down to us in the likeness of men.' And they call Barnabas Jupiter and Paul Mercurius, and because he was the chief speaker. Then the priest of Jupiter, which was before their city, brought oxen and garlands unto the gates, and would have done sacrifice with the people. Which when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of, they rent their clothes and ran in among the people, crying and saying, 'Sirs, why do you these things? We also are men of like passions with you, and preach unto you that ye should turn from these vanities unto the living Elohim, which made heaven and earth, the sea and all things that are therein, who in times past suffered all nations to walk in their own ways.'" Verse 17, "Nevertheless, he left them not without witness in that he did good and gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness." Verse 18, "And with these sayings scarce restrained they the people that they had not done sacrifice unto them." Let's stop here and go back quickly. Okay, so verse 11, when the people saw the miracle that was done through Paul, they were so amazed that they said the gods or the Theon or the Elim were among them. They were speaking, I guess, much Greek they were speaking. So the gods, the powers, have come down to us in the likeness of men. So they were so amazed by what they saw. They never saw anything like this before. Remember, Paul said, "Get up, stand up on your feet." And the man did not just get up, he leaped and walked. And this is a man that was known all his life to have been lame. So they were amazed. This wasn't something that happened by Paul doing any manipulations on the man's body, any medicines, nothing. Was by the word that he spoke, the word of the Spirit of Elohim in him did this. So they were amazed and thought they were divine, in the divine beings in the form of human beings, of people. And the priest of Jupiter, which was before their city, brought oxen, animals, you know, and garlands. And garlands, as I confirmed this morning with Cherie, that garlands are those wreaths. You ever see when they show Romans or even Grecians, like the Caesars would have this crown of leaves on their head, just like a little wreath? That's what the garlands are. But they were highly valued among the Grecian pagan cultures. And so they brought oxen and garlands to put on their heads and would have done sacrifice to the people. But Paul and Barnabas, when they heard of it, they rent their clothes and ran in among the people. That's how zealous they were, passionate they were about their faith. They made sure it wasn't done. So they went to physically interrupt any attempts to offer the sacrifices. And they cried out saying, "Sirs," with respect, if you would say. So in a very respectful way, honorable way, they address the crowd. "Why do you do these things?" And not to make them feel, they said, "We are like you." So they bring themselves, they point to themselves, and "We're just people just like you. You want, and we preach to you that you should turn from these vanities and unto the living Elohim." Remember, they were preaching. This here gives us a hint what they were preaching to them, that they should turn from what is false, the vanities, what's useless, and turn to the living power, to the living Almighty, the living Elohim, which made heaven and earth. Not the things that are created, not the heavens themselves, not the sun, the stars, not any creature on earth, but the creator of all is who you should serve, and all things. And so he identifies what they should be doing, and then tells a little bit about the nature of this being, who in times past suffered, he endured, he allowed all nations to walk in their own ways and did not hold it so much against them. Nevertheless, he left them not without witness. So as he did this, he was still good to them, to teach them that Elohim is good and his mercy is everlasting. As a witness that the Elohim is good, that the creator of heaven is good, not just, but good. And in defining the good, see, he gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness, even though he suffered us to walk in our own ways, as said in verse 16. That's his nature. He's not quick to destroy, but very patient and loving. And we must make sure we understand that so we could be like him. So he was good. This is why it says, "Forgive us our debts as we forgive those who sin against us." So he was very compassionate, even though the nations were sinful, and he allowed them to do what they want, but then he did not withhold his blessing and goodness for them. And verse 18 said, "These sayings hardly restrained the people from doing the sacrifice," because that's what they were used to doing. In their hearts, they had the right intention. Their intention was to honor these men that they saw, they thought were divine. But they were wrong. They were wrong, so it should not be done. This type of honor should be done to Elohim, even though Elohim does not desire these type of things. So verse 19. So saying, restrain they the people that they had not done sacrifice to them. Okay? So verse 19, let's move on. "And there came thither certain Yehudim from Antioch and Iconium, who persuaded the people, and having stoned Paul, drew him out of the city, supposing he had been dead. Howbeit," verse 20, "as the disciples stood round about him, he rose up and came into the city, and the next day he departed with Barnabas to Derbe." Stop here. So here we see how the Gentiles well received them. Right? Even though the Gentiles were confused, they well received them. But what happened? "There came thither Judaizers," those of the rabbinic Judaistic faith. It's not the faith of Abraham. Again, there's a difference. It's not the faith of Abraham. This is rabbinical Judaistic beliefs during the times of the first century and a little earlier have crept in and into the faith of Abraham. It's not the true faith that existed. So they came to Antioch and Iconium and persuaded the people, and having stoned Paul. So what happened? So they somehow convinced the people again, twisted their minds to make them think that this Paul and this Barnabas are evil people that are going to ruin your lives, ruin your way of life. Don't listen to them. Whatever they did, they made them, a lot of them, turn against Paul. Not all of them. I'm sure they were believers. I'm sure the disciples had made disciples among them, but those who were not disciples, and we had a clue how they did it before, they speak to the people in authority. So we should not be surprised that that's exactly what they did. They spoke to the people in authority in those places to turn against Paul. So they stoned Paul, they most likely would have stoned Barnabas too if Barnabas was there. So what does that tell us? That tells us that this event happened sometime, verses 19 and 20 happened sometime after verses 18. It wasn't something immediately that happened when they stopped the people from offering them sacrifice. This is something that happened sometime later. Okay, because it took time for those Judaizers to find out where Paul and Barnabas went. So it's not something that happened immediately. It happened a little later. But then, how be it? So they stoned Paul and drew him out of the city, supposing he had been dead. Howbeit, as the disciples stood around him, he rose up and came into the city, and the next day he departed with Barnabas to Derbe. So, let's look at the power here. He was basically dead, right? They supposed he had been dead. Whether he had died or not, he was seriously injured. But the disciples stood around him, and what happened? He rose up and came into the city. The reason it's written like that is so it could be impressed upon you how it is something that was instant. It's not something that Paul needed bed rest or any such thing. They came around him and he got up. He was well. He was healed of all his wounds, everything. He was well. He rose up. They didn't have to carry him. You understand? He rose up, very clear, and went into the city. He was made whole. And the next day, he and Barnabas departed to Derbe. Right? Well, they were in Lystra, so now they went to Derbe. So that's to show you the power of the Spirit. Again, these things are the new covenant blessings. In covenant, the covenant through Moses for the children of Israel, it was the promise of long life, relatively long life, safety, agricultural produce, health, those type of things. But health and miracles like that were not necessarily so, because when you read Leviticus and other parts as to the responsibilities of the Levitical priest, it included medicinal healing, it including quarantining people. When they had leprosy, you were not going to be healed like that. You had leprosy, you would spend some time quarantined and so on. Even Miriam, he did not heal instantly, because he told her to put her out for a while, and then she was healed. So that was the old covenant. So the old covenant was very natural blessings, so to say, that are kind of guaranteed to the Israelites if they were faithful. But things like miracles like this were not really a part of it so much for their regular lives. But in the new covenant, it is. In the new covenant, these are the things you and I can expect. Okay? And I know that because I'm also speaking from personal experience of many miracles I've seen happen instantly, not with medical help. I've been involved in miracles where it happened instantly, or in a very, very short time without the help of medicine or doctors at all. And I don't have that much faith. So those of you that have more faith than I do, if you apply yourselves to be circumspect and have faith, have proper understanding, I should say, I don't have that much trust. I have the faith, but I need to learn to develop trust because I'm very doubtful. And that's something I pray about all the time against, that I should have trust. But faith is the right understanding, to understanding the evidence so you can have that right trust. And that comes from right understanding. And that's why it said in verse 9, it says, and Paul perceiving he had faith. He perceived he had the right understanding to believe that Elohim was good and that Elohim would allow him to be healed. So anyway, back to this. So that these things are for us. We must not be unbelieving, and you will see great things happen, but you have to believe. Remember, part of the new covenant is as you believe, it will be done unto you. We have to understand as you judge, so it will be judged to you. Your judgment of Elohim, as we think of him, I believe the psalmist also pointed out, the way you treat him, the way you deal with him, he will kind of deal with you that way. If you don't believe he's going to do something, chances are he's not going to do it. Not because he can't, but because he sees we're not honoring him with enough trust. That includes me. Okay, so I'm not speaking to you, I'm speaking to us, including me. We all, if we want to be the congregation of elements in his hand, we need to learn to have trust. We need to have the right faith, understand his mercy endures forever. He is good. even though we don't do what we should be doing, and he doesn't treat us harshly as we deserve, and his mercy, his goodness goes ahead of justice. So let's continue. So in verse 21, it says, "And when they had preached the gospel to that city and had taught many, they returned again to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch." Aren't they bold and brave by the Spirit? They're fearless. The Spirit made them fearless. Those who came, verse 19 says, "And there came thither certain Jews from Antioch and Iconium." The Jews who created trouble for them and had him stoned came from those places. But the Spirit of Elohim made them bold. And they had a work to do. Wow. This is why we really must give honor to whom honor is due, the Scriptures tell us. We should not forget Paul and Peter, even though they've lived on a long time ago. We must not forget Elijah and Moses. We must not forget all the brethren who suffered, on whose shoulders in Messiah we stand, if you follow what I'm saying. We must from time to time give thanks to Elohim for the people like Paul and Peter. And you will see as you do so, there's a scripture that says, "Enlarge my heart." David was praying that his heart would be enlarged to be more loving, more faithful, more trusting towards Elohim. You'll find out that when you give honor to whom honor is due, you will find yourself having greater honor for Elohim. Somehow it creates a sense where you want to give honor even more so to Elohim because of what he has done through these people. Because it is his glory that is shining through these people. So don't let human thinking, Satan, deceive us in, "Oh, we shouldn't honor these people. Let's just give honor to Elohim only." When we do it that way, we will miss out on giving Elohim the honor due to him. Because when we understand the greatness that were in these men, a greatness that was not in of themselves, but was by the power of Elohim, the more we will realize how great Elohim is. And so give him thanks. So look at these guys, these wonderful men empowered by the Spirit of Elohim. They were just attacked by people from those same places, but they're going back there to do the work. And so it says, "And had taught many, they return again to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch." They preach the gospel. That's why preaching and teaching is important. Lifestyle is mandatory. No one should be preaching or teaching or doing anything in Elohim's congregation if we're not living right. We must make sure we're living right, that we're living circumspectly, not making excuses about our sins. If we are making excuses, just remember the goodness of Elohim and turn to him and ask him for the strength to make you circumspect, to make you faithful, to make you sincere and true. Because it is those who are sincere and true that are in his hands. He's not playing. He's very loving and merciful, but he's not going to have mixture in his hands. In his hands, there are no mixtures. Okay? There's no mixtures whatsoever. In his hands are faithful people who will not break the Sabbath for anything, who will not lie, who will not do evil for anything. Yeah, that's really what it is. Who will do good, who will suffer wrong. That's what it is. Not people who will make excuses. But we all, at one point in time, made excuses, including me. But we all, if we ask, can cease to make excuses and live circumspectly. Be perfect examples of Sabbath keeping. Okay? Be perfect examples of living right. And so be instrument of the Spirit of Elohim speaking through us to speak to others. Because others must be taught. It's not enough for them to see your lifestyle. Who lived more holy than Yeshua? Who lived? But did he only do? No, the scripture says he both began to do and to teach. Not all of us are called to be teachers. No, not all of us. But I just want us to, as a congregation as a whole, we're one body. We don't all do the same thing, but we all support each other in what we do. We support each other in being holy, truly set apart, truly virtuous in our lifestyles. And we support each other in our ministries. So those of us that don't teach, support those that teach through our prayers, through our feedback, through our questions. And so we're one body. And as and we function as one. So they went and taught many. They returned again to Lystra and Iconium. Verse 22. And confirming the souls of the disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith, and that we must through much tribulation enter into the kingdom of Elohim. He exhorted them to continue in the faith, the right understanding of the evidence of things not seen, the substance, and so on. That right understanding of the nature of Elohim, the nature of His Son, His Spirit, all these things. And also that while we're in the faith, we must through much tribulation enter the kingdom of Elohim. This much tribulation is not necessarily for everybody. Not everyone went to the church, but in general, yes, it is. Especially for the people in his time. Because remember, the disciples were in the belly of the beast, literally, right? The beast that Daniel saw, this was the time. We must make sure we understand Rome was in charge of the world. Rome is that fourth beast. So they were dealing in where the beast, the first beast that Daniel saw, whose wound, as John in the book of Revelation says, was healed. So they're there. So they must go through much tribulation. So confirming the souls, I don't have the time to talk, but souls and spirits are not the same thing. Let's keep that in mind. Elohim, when he created Adam, and actually the Logos, when he created Adam, he breathed into him the breath which brought life into Adam, and Adam became a living soul. He is the living soul. But the spirit is from Elohim. And if, let's say, whoever is lost, that spirit of Elohim returns to Elohim, but the soul, what the person had chosen to make of him of herself, either to be a righteous soul or an evil soul, a righteous soul surrendering to the ways of Elohim, developing in righteousness, all virtue and goodness and faith, surrendering to the spirit of Elohim, will inherit everlasting life. But the souls who make of themselves evil, not listening to the voice of the Spirit, not coming to know the Savior and meeting the Father, will be cast into the lake of fire. Fear not those who kill the body only, said our Master, but him who after destroying the body can destroy the soul in the lake of fire. So the souls, but here they went to confirm their souls, to make sure, stay in the faith. To confirm their souls. And what else did they do? To continue in the faith, that with much tribulation. Then in verse 23, when they had ordained them elders in every congregation, had prayed with fasting, they commended them unto the sovereign on whom they believe. So I'm going to stop here because of time, but because I want to develop this a little bit more next Sabbath. So But let me just quickly show us the work of the leadership. This is not the work of people like me. This is apostolic authority. Only those who are of the apostolic, those who are true apostles by the laying on of the hands or by the Spirit. They're not, you cannot be an apostle by choice of a church or any such thing. You can only be an apostle by the Spirit of Elohim, or one who has been like Peter and so on, to lay hands and literally transfer divine authority upon the next generation, just like Moses did upon the 70. Well, actually, Elohim did it for him, took of his spirit and spread it among the 70, but the spirit, Elohim, directed Moses to transfer divine authority unto Joshua to take the people into the promised land. So elders are chosen by the power of Elohim, by the spirit of Elohim, by Elohim. Never through the works of mere men. Never through somebody who goes to study in some seminary or whatever. The leadership of Elohim can never be established that way. All that is falsehood, emptiness. It's all it is. For a person to be a leader, an elder in the congregation of Elohim, it must be by the Spirit of Elohim. And you will know who they are because they will have the power living in them. That's the sign. How did they know when Korah was contending with concerning who should be the priesthood? Contending against Moses and Aaron, who should be the priesthood? Was it determined by debate? No, it was determined by the sign of Elohim, right? It was a sign. The rod who would bud, that's the one. So a dried old piece of wood, lifeless, a dried old piece of wood. They all cast it, and Elohim caused Aaron's rod to bud. That means grow branches. Not only grow branches, but it grew almonds on there. So please, believe, understand this. Never allow yourself to subscribe to people who give themselves titles. Now, there are many wonderful people who are teaching out there, but they're humble and honest, and they never call themselves rabbis, pastors, or anything. They just call themselves fellow servants, and they're there to guide, to help people serve. That's fine. But no one should be calling themselves an elder, any such thing, pastor, any such thing, unless it is by the divine laying on the hands or the spirit of it. And there must always be the evidence of that person living a virtuous lifestyle. Their whole family is in order. And don't be offended, those of us that have been in more than one marriage, but I'm speaking about the leadership. The leadership, they're never divorced people. They only have one wife, not more than one wife. And the elders are usually older people. They continue off where the Levites, it's an interesting thing. You have to be about 50 years old, generally, to become an elder. About 50 and up, but with exception. But anyway, so the key thing here is that they confirmed the elders and had prayed with fasting. They commended them to the Eternal on whom they believed. Prayed and fasting. Apostles with powers from on high, yet they prayed and fast to do this. It wasn't a simple thing. It was just not a little ceremony, giving of a handshake, and here's your diploma. The nonsense, I'm sorry to say, but the nonsense we see here, where people have dragged the congregation of, where they claim to be the congregation of Elohim, and they dragged it to such a level where the world blasphemes the name of Elohim. They blaspheme. The so-called church has become a joke to society. We must not partake of that. We must not cause the name of Elohim to be blasphemed, as many of these leaders have done. Impotent. Can't do anything for anybody. Rather than healing the sick, they send them off to the hospitals. That's not right. It is their job to confer upon the congregation a spiritual gift, not sending them to social services or doctors. And no, they have no right to call themselves ministers of the congregation of Elohim, because they're not. I don't mean to be offensive, but I have to speak the truth in honor of my Creator. So after they had passed through Pisidia, they came to Pamphylia. And when they had preached the word in Perga, they went down into Attalia. So they confirmed their leadership. And it also shows you that a congregation can exist for a long time and not have elders. So that's to show you the falsehood that people, they play church. It's like church house. Here are the people, here's the pulpit, here's the pastor, here are the deacons. No, it says they ordain elders in every congregation. So I mean, the congregation existed and fellowship with each other in union under the leadership of Messiah without a human leader for a while. I stop here. Be at peace in the ways of Elohim. Thank you for listening.